Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue, where Board Game Day hangovers are a real thing. It's Mike on the mic here, coming to you after the Board Game Barbecue Game Day, where I was also joined by three other Victorians, but only two are here today. First, we got Jules. How you doing, mate?
I am totally worn out, but I'm glad to be worn out. It was so much fun.
It was a great day. It was a great day. And joining in our awesome day was Dan. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing okay. I had a nana nap this afternoon. Well, for me, that's just a nap. I thought I'd get in there before you did, Jules. So I'm feeling a little bit better now, but I was a bit seedy this morning.
I feel you, mate. Missing is Connor, who was also with us yesterday. But Condog probably has a wedding to go to tonight since he didn't go to one yesterday.
He's probably just rocking up home in Warrnambool at the moment.
Yeah.
I know. It's a bit of a drive, but good on him for making it down. It was good to have him there. And lots of our community was actually really happy to finally get a chance to meet him since he was at a Victorian game day for a change. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. How'd you guys go yesterday? I had an absolute ball. It's always really good catching up with our community down there.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Even though we say we're worn out and we're tired and have a headache or whatever and have to have naps, it's all worth it just to meet people face-to-face that we interact with regularly online and just get to play a game with them. It's just really great fun. Really enjoy it.
And it just flew as well. We did 11 a.m. till 11 p.m. And 11 p.m. came around so fast. Almost.
Absolutely.
Because last time, if you recall, game day two in Melbourne, we actually did back-to-backs because it had been so long between day one and game day two. We did Saturday, Sunday. So I think I was definitely worn out on the Sunday of game two, but almost sort of took for granted the luxury of having 2 days. And yesterday... Yeah. I had a couple of scheduled teachers. I did some impromptu teachers as well, catching up with everyone, and had an absolute blast, but it just wasn't long enough.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah,
it's never long enough. I could have kept going. We were doing a big social reduction game at the end of the night. We'll talk about it later. But I'm like, I just want to keep going. Like, I'm pumped now. I've got a can of energy drink in me. Like, now I just don't want to stop. But, you know, when you got like a 45-minute drive home and you got to pack up a bunch of boxes of games, yet you have to call a night at some point, don't you? Yeah.
And I was still wired when I got home. I didn't go to bed for about an hour after I got home. I was still,
You get that. That's the sort of flow of our game days. You do the game day, then you got this buzz you have to come down from, and the next day you just crash.
Yep.
You know, like so much talking. You like take. Like even some of our volunteers were saying, I forget how much you have to talk when you teach a bunch of games in one day. And let's do a shout out to our awesome volunteers yesterday. Joe taught back to back Botoku and Ark Nova because he is a maniac and he hates having a voice. Like, hats off to him. But I think it took it out of him too.
Absolutely.
We had some awesome games taught. And I was really
Remy did a few teachers as well. What was he teaching? He taught.
Yes.
Remy did Dead Reckoning.
Oh, yes, that's right.
He did Kemet and he did the Reiner Knizia game.
Modern Art.
Modern Art kicked off with Modern Art. Yeah. He was a beast.
They all had very, very busy days. And Dan, you were playing a game that you recently sizzled, weren't you?
And that was completely impromptu. So I had a friend of mine who I used to work with brought his daughter, and they're like, "Oh, we're not really sure what to play." And they saw Skull Canyon Ski Fest, and they said, "Is that the one that you sizzled a couple episodes ago?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." I said, "I've got a spare, you know, 30 minutes. Do you want me to teach you?" And so we sat down and played it, and it was Stuart and I forgot his name now. Jono sat down as well, and I actually just did the teach, and the four of them played it, and they had an absolute blast. They really loved it. It's a really nice, because Pandasaurus, they just excel in really light, easy, sort of fun games. And it was nice for me to teach it, but not actually play and watch them enjoy it. I could sort of leave them to it, sort of walk the room. Meet a few people and then check back in on them and see how they're going. And it was actually Sienna, who's Sean's daughter, who actually took the win because they weren't really paying attention to all the different ski runs that she was obtaining. Mm. And because there's end game scoring, where if you have the most, if you claim the most basic runs or the beginner runs, the most advanced runs and the most black runs, there's actual bonus points at the end there as well. And so they were sort of claiming each other's, but they weren't really keeping an eye on how many she was claiming along the way. And she was last when it came to the final scoring after the third round, and then she collected all these bonus points along the way and just completely passed all three of the guys and and took the win. So shout out to Sienna for taking the win at Skull Canyon Ski Fest. And a lot of people were coming past going, oh, what's this? Because it's a nice little game when it's
even I did. I did the same thing.
Yeah. It's got the little plastic Yeti that you move around to block everyone's ski runs, or you can block it, the ski run that you just did, so that no one else can claim it after you and sort of take it back. So that was a really, really nice one. And it was a nice way to start the day as well before the rest of the teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got to do...
It's not crazily heavy and it's fun.
Exactly. Just ease into things.
Yeah. I got to do an impromptu teach as well. I got to the estates with a couple of people.
Oh, yes.
There were a few people floating around and they said, hey, like, any games in this library you can teach? And I pointed out a few and I was like, the estates. Let's do that. And I taught them and guided them through a few rounds and then left them on their own. And I kept coming back every once in a while to check the game. And they had just got right into each other. Mm-hmm. There was yelling. There was just all kinds of antics going on. It was really fun to see a group of strangers come together and play this cutthroat bidding game, the estates.
How did you find doing a teach to people who haven't necessarily played a bidding game before?
It was pretty fine. It was because the bidding's really basic. You just go around, and once you pass, you're out of the bidding. You just got to bid higher. And that mechanic of you pay the highest bidder pays the person that is auctioning the piece, but you have that option as the auctioner to pay the highest bidder and keep the piece you've put up. That's such a clever part of the game, and I think they really got into it. There was a lot of negative scores in that game.
Okay.
But the winner had a positive one, so it was good outcome.
Can you win that game with a negative score? Does that happen sometimes?
Absolutely. I've seen a winner with negative 20.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice. Because not having played very many auction games before, I find it takes a few rounds to get the hang of what things value is worth. You don't want to go too hard because then everyone else will go hard and then it completely skews things. Just like...
It was really funny. The flow of that game, near the start of the game, one player seemed to be just collecting all the money and everyone else is poor. But then this wad of cash seemed to change hands multiple times throughout the game. It was so funny to see. I'd come back and like, hey, what did you do with all the money? He's got it all now.
Do you know what I need to play, Dan? There's a game. Is it called QE? It's a bidding game, but you can bid any imaginary amount of money you want in it and just write down $10 billion.
Yeah, I've actually got a copy of it coming.
Just make up the value of anything.
I've got a copy. The last thing I backed from, who is that publisher? It's boardtables.com.
Yes, I think it is. I think it's
Board Game Tour and Loot of Lima, some of my favorite games. Whatever it was that I've got coming from them, I actually chucked QE into the pledge as well. Really? So yeah, I've heard a lot about that one. But I remember the first time I played Chinatown and I'm like, I don't, that's sort of auctioning, but sort of, trading things. And I'm just like, I don't know what the value of things are, and end up getting completely taken advantage of by everyone else.
I had a weird impromptu teach last night. Our friends of the show, Amy and Maggie from Think Athema, I made the mistake of telling them that I've played Paint the Roses once before, and they pulled me and said, can you show us how to play this? I'm like, I can try. I didn't teach it last time, but I played it, and I did a very poor job of giving them an idea of how the game worked. But it was really fun stopping in them later, and I had a chat with Amy, and she was just so stressed. That game is so stressful, and she was just like, this is why I don't play co-op. This is so stressful. My brain is hurting. It was a great reaction to see, because I had the same reaction when I played that game, which is an awesome game. Really, really cool little tile laying deduction game. But it was funny just watching them stress their way through it. So at least it just wasn't me.
Deduction games work so well at game days, though, because that's where you want to have a bit of fun. I actually finished the night playing a couple of my favorite word games, which are Decrypto and then So Clover. And so we did Decrypto at 6, we did So Clover at 6, but we also had other people jumping in as well. So it was almost like we were playing with 8. We had 6 of us doing Clovers, but then 8 people all guessing and trying to work out what the things were, and it was great. And I remember Harry, friend of the one of the members of the Discord and the guy that's actually, you know, we can credit for our new logos, he actually came down from Sydney, and we had said that he was going to play a game with me, and we really couldn't sort of make it work. And then he was available when the crypto came up, so we sat down, and here's him thinking he was just going to play this easy sort of word game with Dan and have some fun. But halfway through, he's like, "Man, this is stressing me out. I don't know." He goes, "It's burning my brain." But we had a great sort of back and forth. There was six of us playing to crypto, and it's the other guys who hadn't played it before, they could see why I often refer to it as the Codenames killer, because they're like, "Oh, this is like Codenames, but so much better because there's no downtime."
Yeah,
you get involved when the other team are doing their clues, and then you're getting involved when your team's doing your clues as well. And we actually went on a lot longer than I have in previous games. We did about six or seven rounds before we finally cracked. We actually cracked the other team's code for the second time, but we were being really cagey. But it's one of those games where you try and be a little bit too clever in your clue giving so that the other team doesn't work out what you're saying, but you inadvertently completely throw off your own team and they have no idea what you're saying as well. And everyone's getting stressed out on both sides of the table. It's just so much fun.
It is a good game. I really, really enjoy that one. It's the tensions did look very high at your table, mate. I was playing Men at Work on the table next to you, and we were sort of competing about whose game was more stressful at the time.
Speaking of stressful games, one of the games I got to teach was Unsettled, and that was so when we sat down at the table, I'd brought along the starting planet, which was Wynora, that is labeled number one, but you can play them in any order you want. But it's considered the one to ease you into the game because it has the most simplicity in terms of the mechanics of that planet. And I said, we can start here or we can dive into a box that I've never opened. I literally opened the shrink there at the game day. And the consensus was, let's do something new. So we did that. I had to learn the planet's rules there with everyone. And it was definitely one of the more complex planets. And as we were playing, it was becoming very apparent that we're really struggling here. We've lost two endurance out of the five, I think it is, that you have to trigger the end of the game before you've passed out and run out of energy. And we hadn't even finished the first task and we were struggling to do it. And I was just like, we're screwed, guys. Like, there's no way we can do this. But we eventually did the first task, and then the second one was sort of easier, and then the third one wasn't that hard as well. We managed to pull off the win, and I was like, I was really thrown off because the pacing of that mission was so different to all the other planets. You can kind of, almost with the most of the other planets I've done, you can sort of go, you want to try and complete a task every sort of 1 to 2 endurance, but we'd almost gone to 3 and not even done the first one. It was quite interesting, the pacing being totally different. I was really thrown off and surprised we pulled it off. I thought, we're not even going to get through second task and we're going to die. And that's a pretty miserable failure for a game of Unsettled, but we managed to do it. And it was really, there were high fives all around when we pulled it off, and well done, team. But yeah, that was stressful. We played on the planet Yendril, which is a giant coral sea planet. So there's lots of flooding. And when we get flooded, we take distress cards and that clogs up actions. And yeah, it was just really, really good.
Well, I sat in for about maybe 20 minutes while you were playing the early stages of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And things were looking grim quickly. I just went, well, I'll leave it to it, guys. Good luck.
I went past a couple of tables yesterday playing. I brought a copy of a game that I recently got a copy of, which was Azul Queen's Garden. And I saw some people burning their brains trying to figure that one out.
A lot of play yesterday. I saw that was going for almost 11 till 11. Yep.
I've got a mate that came along to the game day who's not a huge gamer. I've been breaking him in slowly. And I had lent him the original Azul to keep for a few weeks. And he was playing with his family and really enjoyed it. And then I looked over and I saw someone pulled him into a game of Azul Queen's Guard. And I'm like, oh, mate, he doesn't know what's coming. And it's such a good brain burn, that game. I've been absolutely loving it. I feel like it's Azul meets Calico. It's got that similar sort of pattern matching and color matching as Calico, along with Azul. Like, a few people have said the same thing, But absolutely been loving it. I don't mind the Azul games. I quite like them. But this one takes the cake because there's so many more challenges. But it was really fun watching that table just all... The tensions were high. Their brains were burning. And it was really cool watching them just try to figure out how they're going to put this big puzzle together. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's our new favorite here as well. Yeah, Jen and I have been playing it quite a bit, and we love it. We may end up probably swinging back to the OG, but for now, Queen's Garden for us is where it's at as well. There's that sort of additional challenge of where things go. I like the fact that it's picked up a few things from previous iterations, like the Stained Glass and the Summer Pavilion, but it's also dropped some of the other stuff that didn't really work. And I think you say it's Azul. A cross between Azul and Calico, I think, is a cross between Azul and Quirkle, and that was sort of, once we started thinking about it like that, where you're matching, if you match six colors or you match six shapes, then you get the bonuses, and trying to think of it that way, it sort of clicked for us, and yeah, we're really enjoying it as well.
The risk factor is so much higher in it because, you know, if you take these certain colors or take these certain symbols, there's that big risk you're not going to be able to use them, and they're taking up precious space for other potential tiles you could be taking to fill up your areas. And I like that the whole drafting mechanic is so different, and being first isn't necessarily the best thing in that game because you don't have all these factories to choose your tiles from. It's such a slow opening and spreading of the sort of market that you have. It's such a different feel, and that's why I think it's a good version, because you can easily go between the two different Azuls, the first one and Queen's Garden, and they're so different. They do still feel like very different games to me, you know, and one is nice and light, one's a lot heavier, so you can play both in one day and still really enjoy both and not feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, and it's almost like the lessons you learn and the mechanics you learn, or the way you to think about Azul when you play the original one, it easily translates into the second one, and then it just builds on that. So I remember seeing something on one of the communities where someone said, "Oh, is Queen's Garden easy to jump into?" And someone said, "Yeah, it's fine." I did it, and I just went, "For me, I'd be easier if you do the OG one first." Because even something as simple as, okay, you need to get five tiles across the bottom, you're able to put one into your mosaic and you burn the others. Well, it's almost what you're doing in Queen's Garden, but you're not doing it by building up those five and then putting one in. It just means that if you play the five, you need to actually spend five. You put one in and then you chuck the other four. So it's almost skipped a step from the OG one. But if you're already thinking that way, when you collect tiles, then it makes perfect sense for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, such a good game. And Jules, did I see you play an interesting two-player deck builder yesterday?
I did. I got to learn a brand new game for the first time, and I got to play...
Was that your first time playing it?
It was my first time playing it. I got taught Netrunner from Ben, who attended the event, and it was really good. Netrunner's an interesting game. It's been around a while, and it's no longer in print, but... It has, it's sort of still unofficially running in terms of, I guess it's not really, I guess you could say it's a living card game because they bring out new sets of stuff. Has similarities to Magic the Gathering. And there's a massive community that's keeping that game alive and producing not just new cards, but new artwork and running in tournament scenes and all of that stuff that comes along with it. I got to experience Netrunner for the first time, and it's such a clever game, an asymmetric...
Which side did you play?
...head-to-head guard game. I played as the runner, so I was trying to be... I was the hacker trying to get into the corporation.
And was Ben the net?
Yes.
Is that how it works?
I think so, yep. So, basically, I was totally a novice. Obviously, it was my first time playing, but I feel like I got the hang of it. We were just playing with two pre-constructed decks that he had that were beginner-friendly. But I made him sweat a little bit, and he was like, "How am I going to get this going?" Because I kept him very credit poor for such a long time in the game. I felt like I was sort of whittling away at him. But it was really, it was really clever. I would absolutely love to dive into that a bit more, but that was great.
And was that the absolute original one you were playing?
No, this is more of the updated stuff. I don't think this was original, but I can't be too sure.
You know, I just love the idea of a publisher going, you know what, I think we've done all we can with this game and this series now, and then the community going, no.
No, you haven't.
We'll take it from here. That's fine.
We want more.
Yeah, it's such a great thing.
Yeah, do you think it'll get revived? Do you think they'll want to bring it back because there's so much support behind it and there's opportunity to create more things? I wonder if it might revive it, all this love it's still getting.
Because it's a game that has been around for a long time. And forgive me if I say anything wrong, because I'm definitely not an expert on the game. But to me, it might get to a place where the community's just really taken it in as their own. And it would be so hard for a publisher to kick off again without sort of undoing some of the work that the community has done to build it. I think it would be really hard to pick up again unless some people in that community that are keeping it alive decided to form their own publishing company and take off with it further. But
there's an idea.
Yeah, but it's quite amazing what they've done.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, something I'm really interested in trying. And I remember when I first started getting into modern wargaming, it was always there in the background. I was aware of it, and it was never sort of really exposed to it. But just the concept of this, the two-player sort of card deck, and it was completely different to Magic and all those other ones. Yeah, really appealed to me.
Being an asymmetrical deck builder and the first time you played it, Jules, I'm curious, was it a big learning curve?
I did find it somewhat difficult, but I feel like playing Magic the Gathering gave me a leg up, per se. It's really just learning the terminology, understanding what making a run is and the ice, and you know, there's just a lot of terminology. The game itself is quite simple, but it's just terminology heavy, like Magic the Gathering is. Lots of keywords to know and understand what they mean.
That's fair enough. Oh, very cool. Very cool. And I saw you playing a nice big card game with a bunch of people yesterday, Dan.
That was another impromptu one. So what happened was, because I deliberately scheduled three teachers for the end of the night, just to round off the night with some of my favorite word games, Decrypto, So Clover, and Letter Jam. But while we're playing So Clover, someone had grabbed Letter Jam off the shelf and they were playing it themselves. And they were having an absolute blast. And so we thought, well, we'll just let them go. And I think there was a couple of people who were scheduled to play Letter Jam. Nikki was one of them. She was still playing Calico anyway. And so we had a few people milling around. That was like, it was getting to like, I don't know, 10:30 or a little bit sort of before that. No one still really wanted to go yet.
Yeah.
But we didn't really have time to start anything. So I just grabbed six nymphs off the shelf and said, all right, we're going to play a sick nymph game. Who wants in? And Connor was walking past, and Connor goes, I'll play. And we ended up having, I think it was 9 or 10 people playing sick nymph.
Wow.
Absolute chaos. Like I've played it with small groups of four. I've played it probably at 6 on BGA. I've never played it in person.
Oh, you haven't played a big one? Okay.
Not a big group in person like that before. And it was so much fun. But it gets to the point where there's so many people that it's almost hard to strategize. It's just it's a complete crapshoot. I'm going to play this card next, and let's just see what happens, because no one knows what's going to happen.
That's part of the fun. Yeah, what I love playing a big group for six nymphed is you get these moments where you might burn through some of those rows multiple times before your card comes out, or you have moments where it's like all bases loaded and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. When each row has like 4 or 5 cards already, you're like, oh, someone's getting hurt next, and I just hope it's not me.
Yeah.
So everyone plays the big cards, so they're not the first person to just tip it over the edge with the six. But then by the time that row refreshes and loads up again, someone else is going to cop the 6-1 and they're actually going to take that again as well. So it could just as easily be you, even though you're not playing the lowest card that gets played.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. And we ended up calling it after 2 rounds because, well, let me say, I'll rephrase. I ended up calling it because it's the first of 66 points losers. And Nelly was on 51 and I was on 50. So I said, no, that's it. We'll just play it. We'll call it now. Nelly loses. Just triggered the end game.
Man.
Because it was going on for so long, we didn't have time to do a third round anyway because we were going to get kicked out. But it was just a great way to win the night, and it was really just all the people that had finished their last game but just weren't ready to go home yet. So Six Nymphed is just a perfect little game. We crammed 10 people around this small little table, and it was an absolute blast.
That's awesome, man. Love it. Awesome.
But I wasn't I was going to say, I wasn't the only one who had a big, big table going right at the death knell of the, was I, Mike?
That is correct. That is correct. My and it'll be my sizzling game today because I haven't talked about it too much on the podcast yet. It's definitely been mentioned a few times after our retreat. But I ended up getting a full 12-player couple games of Mafia to Cuba last night. Like, it's become a bit of a board game barbecue tradition regularly now to, like, end the night with a bit of a social deduction game if we can. And I like to keep that going because I find after a day of so many big game teachers and, you know, in chatting with everyone and just running a lot of big games, just having a real good laugh at the end of the night is such a great thing, which is why Six Nymphs is such a great option for the end of the night as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a bunch of people together for Mafia to Cuba, and I think only one other person had played it before, which was Ben. Ben joined us as well.
Mm.
And, oh, man, it was just – for those who don't know, in Mafia to Cuba, one person plays like the Godfather, the Don, and he's got a cigar, and you've got a cigar box with 15 diamonds in it and a bunch of, like, really nice, like, poker chips that each have a different role in there. And basically, you can start the game by taking a few diamonds so you know the exact number going out into the crowd. And then everyone passes the cigar box around. They have to take something. They have to either steal some diamonds from you or they have to steal a or they have to take a chip with a roll on there. There might be one of your henchmen supporting you or there might be like a cop trying to bust you. And it just turns into this really fun questioning game where you get the box back and you start asking people questions about what was in the box when they got there. And one of the things I love doing is, you know what numbers are in there. So, you know, there's four henchmen and playing with 12 people. One of my first questions was, how many henchmen do I have out there? And I had 8, 9 hands go up. I'm like, okay.
Connor and I were standing there when that exact moment happened, and it was hilarious. Mike goes, all right, so who's a henchman? And almost everyone put their hand up, and it was like that moment. No, you're not. I'm Spartacus. It was like that moment where everyone was claiming to be a bad guy, and Mike just went, come on.
They're all claiming to have my back. The henchmen are the good guys. They're the ones that are supposed to have my back, so everyone's lying, saying they've got my back. But something really funny happened in that game. So when you're playing with a game where you can steal diamonds, normally a lot of people steal diamonds. So when you say to somebody, empty your pockets, and you're expecting to get some diamonds, you usually got a few choices. But the first game with all these new people, nearly nobody stole any diamonds. There was only 5 diamonds missing.
Wow.
So it was a really, really fun razor blade edge for me because I'm like, one person could have stolen 5 diamonds, or there could be 5 people with 1 diamond each.
Yes.
And everyone had their good bluffing face on, and I got ruined. It was so fun. I accused a few of my henchmen of stealing from me, which I then, of course, have to give them a bottle of tequila in the game to compensate and say sorry. But the game was just brilliant. Like, everyone really got into it. Everyone was pointing fingers at each other, accusing each other, you know, saying the person before them was lying. And just that tension when you tell somebody to empty their pockets and you watch them slowly reach into the pocket and your anticipation of what they're about to pull out and slam on the table and everyone starts cheering, whether it was, yes, you found some diamonds or yes, you busted a cop or whatever it might be. It's just such a fun game, and it's a rare opportunity. I have an opportunity to play with 12 people, you know? And the game scales between, I think, 6 or 12 people, but obviously the more the merrier. And we played like 4 rounds of it. Harry, again, who came down from Sydney, played as the Don one round, and he was hilarious. He just turned on this sass and was sassing everyone at the table and having a really good laugh. And it just made me remember our retreat and how much fun we all had playing it after a few adult beverages late one night.
Dan the Don.
It was just so happened that I was sitting at the head of the table as well.
Yeah.
We played the first game. So I put on my best. You've come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding.
Yes.
Ask me a favor. But yeah, that was really loose. So did people really get into the swing of things after the second
game? Even in the first round, even the people that didn't really understand what was happening got right into it and they clicked together quite quickly. and just people just really get into their little roles they're doing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, the whole game's full of anticipation, and you get through a round of like 15-20 minutes. So that's how we got a chance to play like four rounds of it. Mm. Going and going, and I could have played another four rounds easily, because that game never gets boring for me. It's just full of laughter, full of just all this, you know, guessing game of who's who and what have you taken and all those accusations. It just makes me very excited. So yeah, my sizzle and my absolute highlight of the night yesterday was Mafia de Cuba, which, oh, such a good game. Such a good
I want in next time. If I'm not hosting,
yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll definitely pull that up for everyone. Not a problem.
I was a bit preoccupied with some trouble when you guys were playing.
I was going to say, Jules, speaking of your lovely Unsettled painted game, you were showcasing another new painted game yesterday.
Yeah, I was. So the last game I had of the night was my oath for last time, which was to play a fully painted game of Nemesis Lockdown. And it was so much fun. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, but we got a fair way through the game. And I can absolutely see why so many people love this game and say it's such a thematic and cinematic experience, because it tells a story as you play the game. Mm. It's the game is designed so well that you just feel like it's against you all the time. Just every corner you turn is just danger, and there's just nowhere to go. And at the start of the game, I was playing really conservatively. I didn't want to make any noise to potentially spawn aliens. I was really trying to minimize my risk, but then I realized that I'm just not going to get anything done at this rate. I need to just start running and taking risks and just trying to get my objective done. And I think that's why the game feels so good to play and so tense, is because to do anything, you have to take risk after risk in that game. And I mean, for those that don't know what Nemesis is, it's basically Alien, the movie, the board game. Nemesis Lockdown departs a little bit from the original. It's technically in the universe of those games. Nemesis Lockdown happens after the original game. And so there are a couple of characters that have survived from that first encounter in the original base game. And so they start off with some knowledge of how to deal with the aliens. And they have this cool mechanic of there's weaknesses that you can discover when fighting the aliens to make it a bit easier. But you're doing pretty simple things in the game. You get a couple of actions on your turn. You have a hand of cards. You discard cards to take actions, and those cards have actions themselves. So you're doing things like moving around, discovering rooms, picking up items to take to a laboratory to analyze and get knowledge, which helps you understand the aliens better so you can fight them more easily. Is rooms you're interacting with to turn the power on or off in the facility, because the aliens are not as scary when they're in the light, but in the dark it's terrifying.
I believe they're a different breed of alien in Lockdown than the original game.
Yeah, so in Nemesis Lockdown they're called the Night Stalkers.
Okay.
So they're sort of these creepy looking aliens, sort of almost bat-like in a way. And it's really funny. Because Scotty, who was one of the guys playing with us, he just had the knack for making the aliens spawn on him every single time.
Yeah, every deodorant single or something. Time.
Oh, it was something. Maybe it was the way he smelled. I don't know. It was just awesome. And to his credit, like, even though we had to cut the game short, everyone was still alive at that point. Maybe with a few injuries, but still alive. And we were in real trouble, because a couple of the ways the game can end is, obviously, if everyone dies from aliens and injuries, game over. Everyone loses.
Yeah.
If you have all the malfunction tokens out, meaning the rooms are broken down, the base explodes. And and also, if you have 12 fire tokens out and you have to put out a 13th, the base also explodes and everyone dies. And we were sitting at 10 fire tokens when we had to call the game. We were so close to that base blowing up. But I had managed to finish my objective, which was to send a signal back to Earth and to have 6 knowledge. And I basically, if we'd continued playing, I just needed to find a way to safety, either getting in a pod to shoot out at the base or make my way over to the bunker. So I think I had it in the bag, but you know, who knows what would have happened. I could have spawned an alien that just bit my head off. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what always happens, mate. You're nearly close to the end of the game, and then yes. Boom, a queen rocks up and rips your face off.
Yeah, we never had the queen pop up, but we had a lot of adults on the map at one point. There was a couple of people that had larvae inside of them.
Of course.
We didn't have any chest bursting moments.
Wow.
But this game just, yeah, I really enjoy it. It's a long one. It's one I probably won't get to play a lot, but I absolutely will look forward to the next time I get to do it. And having a fully painted set, let me just tell everyone out there, this is the way to play games if they've got minis. Like, it felt like they were so seamlessly integrated into that game, and everything just felt, you didn't have any gray chunks of plastic just sitting on top of this beautiful board. It really was something special, and I can't wait to play it again and paint the rest of my games that have minis.
So everybody that has a Nemesis set, Jules is accepting them for painting. if you send them over to Jules, he'll get them to you within 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, for the low price of $1,000.
Well, one thing that caught my eye, Jules, because I've played the original, but I haven't played Lockdown that you played. Was there a vehicle in there, like a buggy?
Yes. So one of the ways you can escape the facility is there's a big door that you have to open through certain mechanics, and you can catch this rover out to a bunker that's separate outside the facility, and that's another means of escape.
Oh, so it's not a way to move around the map in the game. That's no. Like jumping in a pod in the original game.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, they made a mini just for one mechanic to escape.
That's cool. But respect.
Yeah, that's right. But on the other side of the game board, there's actually another whole map, and that has more of the Mars surface on there. So you can actually go outside the facility and wander on the Mars surface, and potentially the rover might be used a bit more on that side. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it.
Okay.
But it actually comes with two totally different maps in Lockdown. So
that's cool.
And they have quite a different feel, apparently, and there's different cards that are involved with that side as well. So that's something else to explore in the future.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Nemesis Lockdown. I've enjoyed Nemesis before, so I'm looking forward to maybe trying that with you one day, man. We'll have to organize an event for it, I reckon. Yep. Definitely.
Love to.
And talking about classics, Dan, I think you've revisited an old classic in a bit of a different way recently.
I did. So, and I would love to have taken this to the game day, but it would have meant taking this and the original as well, because we've been lucky enough to get an advanced copy of Viticulture World from Stonemaier Games, and we've been really enjoying this, Jen and I, and I've also been playing it myself. I was just going to spend a little bit of time sizzling it this week, because it's the first game that I've seen which takes an original game and turns it into, or offers a way to play it cooperatively. So everyone's, well, most people would be familiar with Viticulture, where you play someone who inherits a vineyard, and you are planting vines in your fields, and then you're putting them on the crush pad, and you're bottling them up for victory points, and you play it competitively. Well, what this does is it sort of takes that element, but now it's cooperative, and so you are play as a family of winemakers, and you're all trying to meet an objective. And if you're familiar with the original Viticulture, you know that it's the first person who hits 25 victory points wins the game. Well, in Viticulture World, you're playing cooperative, so everyone has to get 25 victory points by the end of 6 years. So that's the clock. You've got six rounds, essentially, to work together. Now, it's still worker placement. So what you can do is, with the fact that it's worker placement, means it limits to who can plant vines, who can harvest the fields, who can. So you know that if someone else is maybe lacking, they're a little bit behind in their VPs, okay, I'll let you take this spot on your turn. I won't take it and block you from it. Okay. So you sort of work together in that aspect as well. You still have the same the same foundations. So there's still four seasons. There's still summer, summer, autumn, winter, and spring. Yes, they're the four seasons, Dan. Well done. And you still have your own board. You know, your board with the fields and the crush pad and the cellar and everything. But the main board is slightly different. It still has the same sort of theme. So you've still got the same areas with the seasons divided up and still worker placement.
So yeah, I got one question.
Yeah.
How much of the original game components are used in this new expansion?
All of the cards are still used. They actually add some additional cards in. So you still have your visitors, your summer visitors and your winter visitors. You still have your purple sort of orders and you still have the vines.
Uh-huh.
You still use your meeples, you still have your grande and then your smaller workers. But in this instance, you only have four of your actual workers and you put little hats on them. two of them have a blue hat for winter and two of them have a blue hat for summer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're locked into using two in the first half of the game, if you like,
okay,
and two in the second half of the year. So everyone has them. But you'll recall in viticulture, there's an option to train a worker and to get additional ones. Well, in viticulture world, when you train a worker, the hat comes off, and now they're a trained worker that can be played in either season, summer or winter. So that's kind of cool. There's also, when you go to one of the worker placement spots to, you know, plant vines or to collect some cards or use cards, there's the spot where they go, and it's one, two, or three people for a four-player game. And there's also, well, sometimes there's a bonus. Now, only your grande worker or one of your trained workers, ones without hats, can actually get that bonus as well. So then if you train a few early, then you're not locked into just using these two dudes for summer and or these two for autumn and these two for the spring. Or no, summer and winter, I should say. So you've still got – so the board is divided into those two sort of seasons, if you like. There's still the you know, the track of who goes first, the wake-up. Now it's an actual sort of rondel style, and you still can't take the same spot as someone else. And then when you've completed the first season, they all move into the center, and you've got three different things you can choose from. So everyone gets a benefit when you move from summer to winter. The great thing with this game is because it's cooperative, your grande workers, you can trade with other people. So not only does your grande worker allow you to go to a spot that someone else has already gone, but when you go to a spot where someone is and you use your grande worker, you can train vines with them, you can train lira, you can actually give them wine. So you can be making wine because of the vines you've got, but then giving the wine to someone else to fulfill the orders that they have. So it's super cooperative in terms of those sort of elements. It really, really takes that competitive thing that the way you're used to playing and just throws it out the window. It's everyone is helping everyone else,
which That's cool.
Which is brilliant. One of the really good things that they've introduced as well is there's an inner one of the worker placements in the first half is an innovation. So you can, because you're a family, so rather than planting fields or, you know, harvesting or whatever, you can spend a worker to innovate. And you get these little tokens which you place over some of the other worker placement spots, which will change the bonuses and change the actual worker placement action, or add an additional bonus when someone goes there. It might be you could get an innovation, put it on the harvest, so whenever someone harvests, they automatically get 2 lira for that. Or they might, you know, be able to do something else. So you can change the actual board as you play to benefit you one way or the other. And what you're essentially trying to do is you're trying to, as I said, everyone needs to get to 25 victory points by the end of the sixth year. There's also a track for influence points, which starts, I think sometimes it starts at 0, sometimes it starts a little further up, but you need to get to 10. Or depending on what country, what region you're playing, there might be different sort of objectives for that. And like I said, there's an event deck, and the event deck is where the regions come in. So there are 7 different regions which you can play during the game. We've only explored the first two. We've explored 2. They have a difficulty attached to them. The very first one is the region is Green Gully. Does that ring a bell to either of you?
No.
Green Gully, like Green the Gully cartoon.
No, it's Charterstone. So Stonemaier, actually, the very first, the introductory region that you play is is Stonemaier's own Charterstone land, if you like. And it's a really good introduction. It eases you into the certain things. There's six cards, one for each year. and you flip it over, and it's not like an event deck in Pandemic or like Rising Atlantis Rising, where things go wrong. What it does is it might just give you different bonuses or different objectives. So if two people harvest this season, you'll get a this year you'll get a bonus. If three people plant vines this year, you'll get a bonus. So sometimes it'll shift the objective. That's in some of them. There's other some of the other countries you can play. The event deck might have different ways of playing. They might have cards that actually cover up certain things, so it actually make it might extend the one of the objective tracks. It might change your wake up rondel. It might change the how you round out the actions or the bonuses you take at the end of end of a year. There's one that actually has different characters you can assume to actually get bonuses. Everyone else has a starting bonus and things like that. So you work through those event decks. Mm. And so that every time you play Asia, you play Europe, South America, North America, the game changes completely. And there are different degrees of difficulty. It is really, really cool. I'm really, really impressed with this. I was a bit hesitant when I sort of heard about the fact that, oh, they're going to take a completely competitive game and make it cooperative. I'm like, huh, how's that going to work? But it's actually really clever the way they've done it.
A question I have about that, Dan, is because I don't know any many games like that either that you can play sort of two different ways. Do you think this is a cool way to teach somebody the game? Because, you know, when you teach somebody a new game, you might take it a bit more easy on them or you don't want to play to the best of your ability. Is this a stepping stone to say, hey, let's play this game cooperatively. Then once you have that knowledge, we can play head to head and you got a bit of training because I helped you out originally?
It is completely different, but Jen is completely on board. My wife's completely on board with this cooperative version. We played Viticulture a couple of times.
Yeah.
We're not enough for her to really sort of get the hang of it, but she likes the theme. She likes that she understands the worker placement. It's just that sort of that tactic of sort of taking spots that that someone else might take or whatever, whereas this, we're working together. So the theme's already a win for her. Yeah. But now we're working together.
That's really cool.
She's sold on it. So we've already played this more times than we have played we played Viticulture twice together. We played this four times together. Another really interesting thing is it's the first cooperative game that I played where it has a solo mode. Because because I read that and just went, well, just to play a cooperative mode solo, you just play it two-handed. Like, I've played Pandemic heaps. I just play two people. I play a medic and I'll play a construction or a demolition or whatever, and we just go for it. Whereas this actually has a solo mode where you play one person and then you have an automa that does things in the field. And it kind of – it's like when you play the normal – Viticulture solo, and it's sort of it's taking up spots in the worker placement areas, and also like it's blocking you in a certain respect. But you can pay lira to actually move it out, so you can put yours in. But it does actually give you bonus things as well. Interestingly, it's not called a automa. It's called a burattino, or probably a burattino.
Burattino.
It's Italian for sock puppet.
Oh, okay.
There you go. That's my little tidbit for that. Well, not my tidbit. It's in the bloody rules. But that's an interesting way of playing it. So it's not like, okay, I'm going to play, because you could easily just play two players, two-handed, and then that's you playing Viticulture World solo. But no, it actually comes with this burattino, which you can put out in the field. And it's like having a robot that's doing some harvesting for you and is planting some vines. Then you go, oi, I need to go there. You get out. I'm going to harvest some fields. And you pay two lira and you move him out of the field so you can go in the field. And he already starts at 25 victory points. All you got to do is try and get you to 25 victory points and get that influence track up to 10. Really, really interesting. We're actually really, really enjoying it. So, yeah, highly recommend when it comes out, checking it out.
Sounds awesome. I actually haven't played Viticulture at all yet, so
me neither.
I need to try one of them or both of them. I've never been offered. You've never offered me, Dan.
I assumed an awful lot when I started just skimming over the rules of Viticulture, but
talked about enough that I got the feel of it.
Interestingly, you do need Viticulture to be able to play Viticulture well, not just the understanding, but you need all the pieces.
Right. So it's an expansion, not a standalone expansion.
It takes
a cooperative expansion.
Yeah,
exactly. You need to have the core game first because it uses all the meeples, it uses all the cards, it uses some of the boards even, and then just introduces and puts a really unique spin on the game, whereas now you're not playing competitively, you're not competitive winemakers, you're actually a winemaking family and everyone's working together, and you are in Asia or you are in North America or you're in Oceania. And the cards itself have little facts about winemaking and how winemaking originated in all these different regions around the world and the kind of wines. It's really, really well done.
That's really cool.
I have to say, Mike, when you were saying before, you know when you teach a game and you go easy on someone. I just didn't understand that.
You don't.
I saw you sneak up when Mike was suggesting.
I meant normal people, you know, not these brutal, evil people like yourself. But you've smashed me in some games. That's all right. That makes beating you all the more better.
That's right.
And I also just want to point out one other thing as well, which I thought was really interesting, which is that I'm going to have to give you a bit of background as well. So when you play viticulture, you start with a grande worker, and then you start with what was referred to as a mama and a papa card. And the mama and the papa card are basically the parents that you inherit your vineyard from, and they come with different bonuses. So every time you start with different bonuses. You might start with three additional workers plus 5 lira plus a trellis, or you might start with some irrigation and 2 lira and 4 workers, something like that. Well, they've added more mama and papa cards to viticulture world. But where the papa cards were blue and the mama cards were red, they've swapped it now, and they're not referred to mama and papa anymore. They're referred to red and blue cards. So when you start the game, you actually take a red and a blue card, and they're your starting cards, but you might have 2 males or 2 females. So it's actually stepped away from the sort of heteronormative pairings that viticulture introduced way back when, and gone, you know what? You could easily inherit. You could inherit a vineyard from 2 mothers or 2 fathers. So I think that's a really nice sort of
getting with the times.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. A little bit of a social conscience. I know there's also some other issues that they've gone and corrected since the initial viticulture world was released, and there's been enough said about that. So, but I just thought that was also something that they should have a little bit more credit for as well. Just stepping away from, as it's referred to, some heteronormative pairings, and gone, okay, it's just 2 people that you inherit, and that's how you start the game.
That's cool.
Which I thought was really awesome.
I like that. Very cool. Very cool. Before we jump onto the next segment, I just wanted a real quick shout out. I'm a bit excited because tonight I have to stay up till 2 a.m. to submit my wish list for Gen Con. So just letting some of our members know, if you're heading to Gen Con, you might be able to catch me there and say hello and share with us. Share with me your wish list. Show me what sort of events you're going to be hitting up, because there's a bunch of crazy events you can do there. You can make your own chainmail dice bag, or do a burlesque class, or there's all crazy. Yeah, there's so many crazy. There's only about 13,000 events, I think, at the moment that I've been sifting through to make a list from. I've never seen anything like it before. So,
what are your top five things that you want to?
Yeah, what's at the top?
So my number one thing is I want to hit up the AEG game night. It's supposed to be a huge game night where they do a bunch of launches and show a bunch of really cool games. I want to check out the Dice Tower, like live recording where they do a top 10, and I'll go side of Tom Vassell and stuff. What's my other top ones? There's like a big block party, just a big party where they do at night and everyone can have a few adult beverages and just meet each other and mingle. There's a new Clank being released at Gen Con, Gen Con exclusive new Clank that I want to sign up for. And so many things. And there's I'm a big fan of improv comedy, and they have a bunch of like board game related improv comedy sketch groups and things. And so I really want to go check out one of them. Just something so different, you know, like a real niche thing I'm not going to find anywhere else. So those are some of the events. But I'm going to step
to it. What are the dates for Gen Con, Mike?
Gen Con, I think, is on, don't quote me, but I think August 4th to 8th. It's 4 days.
Wow.
So I'll be getting there the Wednesday and lining up for a very long time to pick up my tickets. And then it goes, all day for the next few days. And it's a hard sort of thing to try to choose what events to go to, because you want to leave yourself open, because apparently that they've released a picture of like all the main event hall with so many places to go check out. So people have said it'll take you a full day or two just to go see all the booths, see all the new releases. So I'm trying to create a good balance of checking out a few things, booking in for a few games. I'm thinking of playing a game of Zombicide while I'm there, because, you know, it's one of my favorite games, and play with a bunch of people there. But I'm trying not to sign up for too many games. I think games just want to go with the flow once I'm there. Just maybe I sign up to play Street Fighter, the miniatures game, because I never see that in the wild and I just want to try it. It looks really cool. But there's just so many things to look through. And Renata's really excited because they make it as exciting for partners. So there's wine tours. There's like how to knit. There's knitting classes. Renata is getting me to sign up for salsa dancing 101.
Ooh.
So a bit of salsa dancing. But like, it's so cool because we can go off and do our own things and sign up things together. But she, as a not a huge board gamer, doesn't have to go and be stuck playing board games all day. There's thousands of events for absolute non-board games. Oh, another thing I'm really excited for is True Dungeon, which is a really big thing they do there, which is I don't understand it completely, but to my understanding, it's almost like a giant escape room.
You
get a character, like you might be a mage or you might be a warrior, but there's also actors in there that are playing monsters you have to battle and things like that. So it's like some sort of really big... Yeah, I don't know what to expect. And I'm trying not to read up too much on it because I just want it to be a surprise.
Yeah, nice.
I'm actually going with a couple of friends as well to Gen Con. So we're hoping to book a group together, just us. I think they allow like 10 people at a time. So if there's any other listeners out there that are going to Gen Con and want to do True Dungeon, hit me up and we'll see if we can organize an event and a time we could all go together, and that'll be really cool to meet up with some members there. So awesome. I'm very excited. I won't keep going on about it, but I just want to do a shout out to say I'm excited and see if any of our other members are going and if they're excited and if they have any cool Gen Con tips.
That's great.
But on that note, let's move over to our bracket.
Hi everyone, Connor here. Just want to take a sec to talk about one of our sponsors, 2D6 Games up in Brisbane. 2D6 support this podcast, and Dan, Dave, and Joe are a great community-focused team who are always present at our game days. They offer free shipping Australia-wide, which is an incredible bonus. They also directly support the Brisbane Game Day, so if you're ever at a Brisbane Game Day, drop into their store and say hello.
Okay, so this is an interesting bracket here. It's two pretty behemoth games, both with really big followings. We've got Wingspan and Root. So, Jules, tell me why you wanted Wingspan to win.
I didn't.
What a surprise.
I actually got to play Root today as a little bit of a game day after party with a couple of community members, just had their Sunday free. And played just sort of OG factions, none of the expansions. Mm-hmm. I got to play as the Cats, which I haven't done very much. And just, it's just a brilliant game. I managed to pull off the win, pretty proud, but it's just a very, very clever game. I think that this is a game that will stick around for a long time, has a massive fan base, making fan content. It's brilliant. But likewise, Wingspan also has... A lot of people that love it. It sold millions of copies. So it's a tough battle, I'm sure. I hope Root gets over the line.
Dan, did you have a dog in this fight? Were you on the Wingspan party?
No, I played Wingspan twice. I played once and once in the actual physical game. And I have a copy of it. I haven't cracked open my Oceania expansion yet. And I've played it on Steam as well. And I didn't really like the Steam port because you actually have to flip between screens.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah, and I really need to see the whole board, like see the whole picture. So, something that I just realized just the other day, and it's probably obvious to you guys, but Root, Leader Games, all their games are four-letter words.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Know that.
Vast, Fort, yep. Root, Oath, and they got Arcs coming.
Yeah. It was only when I heard about the new one coming and someone mentioned just off the cuff that they're all four-letter words, and I went, they are too. That's so cool.
Yep.
So I'm expecting poop and fart to be coming in the catalogue.
I was tempted to make that kind of joke. I'm like, no, it's too obvious being me. So I'm glad you did.
My boys, that's all I'm hearing at the moment is they're four-letter words. So,
oh, dear.
They've avoided, frankly, the key four-letter words at this stage. But But it's all poop.
I did give Root the tick for this one because I've played both games twice. And even though Root intimidates the crap out of me, when I learned it, I saw how intricate it was and how asymmetrical it was. You got to give it up. Like, you got to give credit where credit's due. It is such an intricately interesting game, and especially the way the Vagabond moved around really impressed me. And I'm like, I've never seen anything like it. So I did give them the tick on that one for myself because I thought it deserved it.
Have you played Root, Dan?
No.
Ah, well, we need to fix that.
100%. Yeah,
it's in
my blind spot.
So this was a pretty epic fight, and it came pretty close. And the winner won by 12 votes. And that winner was Root.
Let's
congratulations, Root. Root took out the Behemoth Wingspan and will be going into the next battle. And I didn't know which way I was going to go. I wasn't quite sure.
The community really came to the party on this. We had almost 300 people vote.
That's amazing.
So to really impressive. Win by 12, it's good.
That means that we have to launch a new bracket battle. And I've had one of these before where it just kicks me in the guts a bit because it's one of those picking your favorite child sort of situations. And it is a battle between two awesome worker placement games. This is one of the closer ones, I think, that you actually can compare them pretty well, I reckon. Mm-hmm. We've got Architects of the West Kingdom and we've got Everdell. Two worker placement games that both work very differently. One's cutesy. One is awesome artwork, but I wouldn't call it cutesy. It's not cute little, creatures. Before I get into it, where do you guys sit? Because I'm actually not sure.
Well, I've only ever played Everdell once, and I thought it was okay. Like, it didn't blow me away. I wasn't really expecting going any into it, and I've only ever played it online. But the module for that online was very good. It had the full artwork and it looked really nice. And Architects I've played a couple more times, most recently with you, Mike, with all of the expansions. But Everdell has a lot of expansions as well, but I haven't tried any of those. So I don't know how much it changes the game up. But if I had to pick one, I would go with Architects. Yeah, I guess for me personally, I'm just not a big worker placement fan.
Like, it's not usually your thing, is it? Yeah,
it's not really. Yeah. I don't know why. There's definitely games I play that have elements of it, but it's not the whole game.
Yeah.
But I think both games are good. But if I had to pick, I'd go Architects.
And how about you, Dan?
It's funny. I've only played Everdell once as well. And in fact, it was Mike that I played it at Mike's place.
He did.
I played with Mike and ran out. And I came away with the W as well. Mm. So I retired early and said, I've played it. I've won it. I've done it. But you know, Architects is in my top 10. So my vote's going to be with Architects as well.
Right.
Only because I do like the fact that the worker placement, you have so many workers and that they do move around the board and they can get captured and you can retrieve them. And the more worker placement, the more workers you put in a spot, the greater the reward. But then, of course, the bigger the target on your back. I think that's a really interesting way of taking that sort of old style worker placement and going, well, who's to say that you have to have one worker or two worker? Why don't you have three or four? And the longer those workers go out, stay out there, the bigger the reward. But then it becomes more of a social thing because everyone's like, well, hey, we can't all let him get away with sitting at that mine and collecting all that sort of stuff. We've got to lock him up. And then I like the track on the side with the I'm going to forget what it's called now. The Virtue track, yeah. I have played with the Artisans. I enjoy the Artisans and what that brings. I haven't played with the second expansion.
Works of Wonder.
Works of Wonder actually arrived this week for me. So along with Paladins and with Viscounts. So I'm excited to get them out of street one day.
Package.
But yeah, it was huge. I feel sorry for my postman. But Architects for me, I think, in this worker placement battle, it's the better of the two.
I'll talk a bit more about Everdell. Like, look, I'll be honest that Architects has got a lot more play for me lately than Everdell has, but that doesn't take away my Everdell love. Like, if I was going to compare the two directly, the main thing I would probably say that if I'm talking about what's in favor of Everdell, other than the cuteness and the table presence of the tree, they're all given. It's a beautiful game. Beautiful game. But one of the big differences for me in playing a lot of games of Everdell is how different a lot of the games feel for me. So when I play Architects, I know what I'm expecting. I'm expecting to try to catch some guys, lose some guys. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Like, it's doesn't surprise me a whole lot, to be honest. Like, I always know what I'm getting into, and it's a fantastic game, and I enjoy it. But Everdell, the deck is huge. And the combination of cards can really change. Now, this can be a good or a bad thing. I've had games of Everdell as an Everdell lover that I just couldn't get my groove because I couldn't get some good combinations in my deck that worked well together. And that can happen. You know, with so many different cards, you can't always get a good... And that just might be me not playing optimally. But I've had some games that just blew me away. Like, there's some cards I've looked at in Everdell before, and I'm like, when the hell would I ever keep this card, and why would I use it? And then three games later, I had this engine, and that card's come up. I'm like, oh my God, this card's amazing. With this engine I have right now, this card is the bomb. How have I ever looked past this card? But, like, different games, I get a totally different feel, and I might play a totally different way. And the expansions for Architects are awesome, and I probably don't want to go back to playing without them. But the expansions for Everdell add a whole new vibe to it as well. I think that the, what's one I have? Spycrest. Spycrest is really cool. Added a lot of really cool elements to it. The giant meeples are really cool. And look, you can never go past the squishy berries.
I was waiting for you to mention squishy berries.
I'll always mention squishy berries. Don't worry, Dan. I'll never disappoint you, my friend. So that's the one thing I'll give Everdell, that it's a more surprising game to me every time I play. And I feel like one play of Everdell probably won't give you the proper feel, because I feel with more plays that just seeing how different combinations you can get and different ways you'll end up playing, it swings a lot in a really cool way and always feels fresh to me. And there is a lot more reading on the cards, and that can be a bit of a negative, especially when you're playing with people on the other side of the table. It might be a bit harder. So all those things are valid arguments and things that might make the game a little less enjoyable. But Everdell for me will always have a special place in my heart, because it's just really cool combos. The art is absolutely beautiful. The table presence rocks. And I think it's really cool. And I love those sort of games where you all have that open, like the field where anyone can build from the field. So you'll have your eye on a card and just waiting for someone not to take it. And that anticipation is really cool. And, you know, even the fact they can only build 15 places in your tableau really limits you and makes you think twice about what you want to build. And yeah, look, Everdell definitely has a dog in this fight, and I think it has a lot of supporters. Where my vote's going to go right now, I'm not sure, because even just talking about Everdell is making me want to play, because it's been a while. Like, yeah. It's getting me revved up, and I need to have a game, you know? Like, it's just the latest hotness, and I'm pumped for the new expansions coming with my new big box that'll be arriving in the next few months, maybe. So, but it doesn't matter what we think, guys. It doesn't matter at all. It matters what you, the community, think. So this is going to be launching as of tomorrow, guys. So make sure you jump on our Discord, jump on our Insta, jump on our Facebook, put your votes in. If you're passionate about one of these games, jump on all three. That's what I normally do. I might even do the dud thing and just vote for one of each, you know, and try to give them both a fair fight in this. But I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah,
you
know? I'll be interested to see
where it goes.
Yeah, as you were talking about it, I was thinking, I think I have similar feelings about when I played base game Wingspan and base game Everdell. Mm-hmm. And when I played Oceana for Wingspan, totally changed it. I really, really like it with that expansion now. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Everdell, one of the expansions, would do that for me as well. So I have to give it another go sometime.
What I picked up is that I really enjoyed the mechanics of Architects, but I feel like there's like an emotional connection for you, Mike, with Everdell. It might be the same for a lot of other people as well, in terms of the theming and the way everything just fits really nicely, as opposed to just, okay, this is mechanically, like, you know, really, really fun to do. Whereas there's, it is the squishy berries, it's the artwork by friend of the show Andrew Bosley, and it's just that there's, and it may have been something that that people have wanted, one of the early gateway games. I think it will have a really good showing in this battle.
And
make sure you jump on our Facebook page if you're on there, guys, and put a comment down with your arguments. Like, I love when we have a really good battle and people jump on there and they state their case and state why they want to fight for their game. And I love seeing those things, because it just gets everyone else excited to try them as well. So go on and vote, guys. Jump on our socials, and we'll see you there and let you know next week who the winner is. And with that, we'll move over to our oaths.
Hey everyone, it's Sarah here. I want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors who has sponsored the podcast from the very beginning, and that is Advent Games. AdventGames.com.au is an Australian board game store. This is the store where I get all of my games from. so you know that I'm not just advertising it just because. This is very personal to me. And Dean, who runs it, is very knowledgeable about games. He is a huge board gamer himself, and he often gives advice and things like that, and just awesome all-round customer service. So all around New South Wales, you can get flat rate shipping from adventgames.com.au for $10. If you're somewhere else in Australia, you can get flat rate shipping for $15, not that much more. And if you are super local, you can even see Dean at Chatswood on Tuesday nights to pick up games from him, from his very paws. So that is adventgames.com.au. Thank you so much for sponsoring the podcast.
Now, before we jump into those guys, I just want to do a quick shout out to all our Patreon members. Thank you so much for all your support. Don't forget, guys, if you do want to support the podcast, for only a few dollars a month, you can jump onto our Patreon. That's patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue. You can sign up and get a bunch of access to a bunch of episodes we've done. I can't remember how many we have there, but I was having a look recently and there's days of content on there, and we're always adding some more. You get special access to a really cool channel and a Discord. So for a few bucks a month, guys, if you jump in there, it helps us, you know, achieve more on the podcast and is very, very supportive. But we understand that everyone can afford a few dollars a month. It's tight for everyone. So you can also do things to support us, like jump on our Facebook and our Discord channels and just, you know, contribute to the community. You can jump on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and give us a 5-star rating or whatever you think is fair. We all know it's 5 stars.
5 stars.
It's a 5-star.
If there's any other choice. I delete anything that's 4 or less.
And if you do a 5-star review, we're going to make Dan read it on the podcast as well.
I'm checking now to see how many we have.
That's right. So, guys, there's plenty of ways to help support us, and we look forward to hearing from you guys.
So, speaking of supporting us, it happened a little while ago, but I'll just say a big thank you to the community again for those who nominated us in the BGG 2021 Awards for Best Podcast. We didn't manage to get a nomination. We're still a young podcast compared to a lot of others out there. But we'll be back next year, hopefully stronger. And it'd be thank you again to anyone that casted a vote our way to nominate us as one of the best podcasts out there.
And, every now and then, someone will hit up the Australian Board Gaming Facebook group or other sort of international board gaming group saying, oh, can anyone recommend a podcast? I've just got into podcasts. And the amount of people that will actually throw our podcast into the mix, we really appreciate it. We sort of
absolutely
sit back and just go, wow, that is so kind and generous of you guys.
Thank you very much, folks. We really do appreciate it. Now to talk about oaths, and I'm oozing with confidence right now. I'm sure that everyone's hit all their oaths. Let's start with Jules. Jules, we're going to hit it out the park straight away because you already spoke about your oath.
That's it. I already talked about my oath, fully painted set. I did come down not super close to the wire with actually doing the painting, but I was pushing myself a little bit. But I got it all done, and I'm so glad I did. It looked fantastic on the table, and I really enjoyed it. So that is done. I've been doing a lot of painting oaths of late, and I thought I'd just give it a little break, not painting, but the oath painting stuff, and get back to giving an oath for a board game that I want to play. And when I was looking at my shelf, I realized there's a game I have played, but only solo, and I'm very excited to play this with other people, and a few conversations I've had recently, it's come up a few times, and that is Age of Steam. It's been very popular with a few people up north in our podcast group. They have some train fever at the moment, as well as other 18XX games going around, which Age of Steam's not in that category, but very closely related.
It's not far.
It's not far from it at all. Just one station over. But yeah, I would like to play a multiplayer game of Age of Steam, not just solo. So I, Jules Watson, swear by the next time I'm on the podcast, I will have played a multiplayer game of Age of Steam.
Very exciting. And mate, I told you before, I'll put my hand up for that if you want, because that game took me by surprise. I did not think I would enjoy it, but I found it really interesting. And I think some of our other friends we play with down here will have a lot of fun with it too. So I'm looking forward to hear how that actually goes.
I might have to try and get in on that as well. I've only played it on TTS with Sarah and Def and maybe Adrian as well. And yeah, same, Mike. I just went, trains, yeah, all right, I'll join in. And then halfway through, I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
In fact, I may even try and convince our northern podcast hosts to actually start up a game, because I'm actually flying up to Brisbane next weekend for the Brisbane game day. And I'm going to be there for a part of Sunday as well. So if I can twist Def and Adrian's arm to get a game of Age of Steam going, I will.
Oh, you got to be really careful. Cool. You might come back and you find all your shelf has turned into 18XX games.
Yeah.
Just a wall of beige. And let's keep you talking, Dan. Tell us how awesome you did in Euro.
Oh, unsettled, let me tell you. So I sat in while Jules started playing it, and I went, does this count as my oath if I sit here and watch for 20 minutes?
You weren't involved in the danger and the stress and the flooding. It doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count. And I know I didn't actually play it. I've been doing a lot. I've been really busy, guys. Normally, what's Adrian or Sarah would normally blame someone else when they don't. So I don't know.
Always.
That tiny violin playing, guys.
I don't have anyone else to blame. So no, I haven't played Unsettled yet. I still will, but I will double down as we do here on the podcast. And I am going to take a game out of Shrink that arrived a couple of weeks ago from Kickstarter that Mike taught at the game day to our friends at Thinkathema, and that is Paint the Roses.
Nice.
It's sitting on my shelf. One of those things. I had a whole bunch of stuff arrive in one week, and that just went on the shelf. And I'm like, oh, we're gonna play it. And I think it would be the great. I think Jen would really enjoy it.
It's so very stressful.
Yeah. No, that's cool. But deduction. Like you've got me at deduction.
Yeah.
So yeah, I, Dan Harris, swear to play Paint the Roses and also Unsettled by the time I'm on the podcast next, which I think is only a fortnight away. So it doesn't give me much time, considering you got this.
I have confidence in next you, Dan. Week. Confidence.
So, yeah. But I'm doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes too, which I can't talk about, so I'm really busy. But we'll see how we go.
Awesome, man. So that's Unsettled and Paint the Roses coming up from Dan. Mm-hmm. My oath was to play Architects of the West Kingdom with the Age of Artisans and the Works of Wonder expansions. So I did complete that. I've actually done it twice now, and both games are really different. The Works of Wonder has these wonders you can build. And in the first game we played, no one really cared. Like, they weren't really a big thing that anyone used. It introduces some other really, really cool vibes into the game with some, what's the guy called? There's a black and a white
Profiteer?
Meeple. The Profiteer and the
Princess.
The Princess?
Yeah.
And there's some meeples that move around the map and give you some positive or negative effects while they're in certain areas. And I feel that really brought a really cool vibe to the game.
That was definitely my favorite part of the expansion.
Yeah, it was really cool. But the second time I played, people went ham on the wonders. There was only one wonder left at the end of the game.
Oh.
And that was a 5-player game. And it was epic. It was crazy. But watching people really rush for those wonders was really cool. I'm like, oh, okay, it just depends on the group that you're playing with and how much they really care about it. But no, they smashed it in that one, and I did very poorly. but that's okay. That's how it always happens. I think I won the game we played from memory. I did. That's why there's a 3-way tie for second.
Yes.
And I won. But the next game, I think I came dead last. And that just seems to be my my vibe lately. Yeah. So that was done. And I'm going to do one of these oaths that everyone else does and I haven't done yet, where I'm going to say, I'm going to swear to play a game if it arrives on time, but I think it should.
I thought you were going to do a I'm going to swear to paint.
No, I'm not going to do that. I have been anticipating a game to come for quite a while, and I haven't received a notification yet, but I've been seeing lots of our community members having a popping up in their mailboxes, and that's Monsters on Board. This game I've been really excited to play. It has some really cool dice placement and really cool little minis of a bunch of monsters that are going around a track, and I don't even know how to explain the game properly. It just looks really cool. It's got little cardboard cars that you put your dice in, and you drive them around to other players to do sort of dice drafting. It just looks like a really cool game. I still remember the day that I saw it on Kickstarter, and I wasn't super interested because I'm very impatient. I don't read everything. And then I watched Gerardo playthrough of it. I'm like, oh, wow, this looks insane. It looks really cute, but it looks pretty heavy. Like, okay. That gameplay looks really involved. So That should arrive, I'm hoping, within the next week if everyone's starting to get theirs. So I, Michael Faruja, will swear to play Monsters on Board by the time on the podcast next. And if it doesn't arrive, bad luck. I just get to skip an oath for a chance and do what Mitch does all the time. So that'll be me. And that will end us for this episode. That's three oaths sworn. And you'll have to listen next time to see how we go with them. So thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me tonight.
Thanks, Mike.
It's been a pleasure as always.
Always a good time. Thank you again to everyone that joined in our Board Game Barbecue Game Day. And just a little secret, if you're in Melbourne, we haven't officially launched it yet, but there might be a new event on Eventbrite for late August. So look on Eventbrite for a bit more detail on that. But on that note, guys, thank you very much. Have a great night, and we hope your next game is a sizzling one. We nearly had a trifecta, Dan. You let us down, mate. It's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You should have just jumped it on Dan on Bloody Jules' game. I literally
sat down and went, if I sit here and watch this account as my own, and there was I received an emphatic no from the table. Oh, and screw you guys.
That's the problem when people actually listen to us and then you try to pull a shifty in the game day. Yeah, called on it. No one's going to let you pass with that.
Nah.